Good evening.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States in 1961.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no secret is revealed. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President in 1996.
You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society.
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
I've got a vision for what I want to do for the country. See, I know exactly where I want to lead. It's so secret we can't talk about it. What does that mean for America?
Good evening, and welcome to the broadcast on Wednesday, the 3rd of January 2013. My name is Walt Stickle, and I will be your host for the next 45 minutes. Tonight's broadcast, President JFK Exposes the Unseen Hand, Part 2. Last week, we got through half of the President's JFK speech given at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel on April 27, 1961, titled The President and the Press Before the American Newspaper Publishers Association. Welcome to the broadcast, Tom.
Good evening, Walt. Thanks for having me, and good evening to your listeners.
We're going to start the tape from the beginning until where we left off last week. So I'll start the tape.
All right. Before we do, I'd like to recap just briefly the third paragraph of the portions of that speech that we selected to comment upon tonight. Not all of the speech is worthy of the comments as related to the subject matter of our discussion. And again, I want to remind the listeners that we're not trying to take the President's speech out of context, but we've found information in this speech that requires more comment and analysis. And particularly this third paragraph, and I'll read it quickly. It says, "For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of election, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed." And what we told the listeners last night, or the last time that we got together on this subject, that in that single paragraph, John F. Kennedy put the finger squarely upon the Jesuit order, where no other organization in the world could qualify as a monolithic conspiracy. In the normal definition of those words, monolithic means one. single, solitary. A conspiracy requires at least two conspirators. So you can't have a monolithic conspiracy except for one possibility, and that is the Jesuit order. And every Jesuit of the Jesuit order, and there are thousands, every one of them have conspired to act in one mind with the Jesuit general. Every Jesuit acts as though he were a stick in the hand of an old man. And they follow orders without question, without equivocation, without mental reservation. They follow his instincts. They are highly, highly trained. They are the most highly trained militia on the planet. And they are, in fact, in charge of building the New World Order and preparing the world for the rule of a single man, and that is the Pope of Rome. Now, he talks about them relying upon covert means. They are completely secretive. Okay, they hold secrets better than any other organization in the world. They rely upon infiltration instead of invasion. In other words, they are a clandestine organization, and they never take on their opponents face-to-face. They always infiltrate the organizations of their enemies and then subvert them. They rely upon intimidation rather than elections. That's consistent with the old world order, where the kings were appointed by the popes, and then they intimidated the people. They rely upon intimidation rather than free choice. Free choice was not an option in the old world order, which the Jesuit order would like to restore in the world. Everything was scripted by the papacy. They rely upon guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. Again, they never face their enemies directly, but they are called the Black Regiment for a purpose. And they do all their military operations clandestinely. And it is a system which has constricted vast human and material resources. Everything is for the free use of the Jesuit order. They have access to the most advanced technology, the greatest intellects in the world. All things belong to the Jesuits. They are one of the most financially independent and wealthy organizations on the planet. They are highly organized, highly efficient, and they combine all the efforts of military. You'll find Jesuits in the military, in diplomatic, that is the State Department, on intelligence, all the intelligence organizations in the world, including the CIA, MI5, MI6, KNBD, and the Mossad. They control the banks, economics. They control the banks through the Rothschild banking dynasty, who we know from F. Tupper Saucy on page 160 of his book, Rulers of Evil, that the Rothschilds are the guardians of the Vatican treasury. Though they be Jews, though they be Freemasons, they work for the Pope. The Pope's mega banking operations are controlled by the Rothschilds, by the Jesuits. They use the free use of scientific. They have some of the most preeminent scientists in the world. They also have the use of 28 of the most prestigious Jesuit universities in the world. The epitome of education in the world is the Jesuit institutions, and also political operations. This is done through the Knights of Malta, the CIA, and the Council of Foreign Relations. All right, it's prepared. Its preparations are concealed, not published. It's highly secretive. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. As a matter of fact, when they make a mistake, they kill the one who made the mistake, and it's never reported. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned. They have black budgets. They don't have to report to anyone. Their books are never audited. Totally secret. No rumor is printed and no secret is revealed. Again, the most highly secretive organization on the planet. And after all, it has to be. Because if they intend to conquer the world for the Pope, for the governance of a single man, their operations have to be secretive. Now, We'll begin with the recording on the fourth paragraph. Go ahead, Walt.
Yeah, Tom, I'm going to start this from the very beginning.
It's okay.
Two minutes, and then we'll stop it where we left off last week.
Okay.
Okay, here goes.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed. No president should fear public scrutiny of his program.
Stop the tape. Okay. In the third paragraph, we had President Kennedy exposing the Jesuit order and their operations, their secretiveness. Now, President Kennedy, with this portion of his speech, is going to contrast his administration with that of the Jesuits. He opens up by saying, no president shall fear scrutiny of his program. In other words, this is my program, he says, and I will not fear public scrutiny. And he's also saying, I do not support the Jesuit black ops. My program will be transparent. So he is, and not only has he identified the Jesuits and how they operate, he's making himself a distinct difference from the Jesuit order. He is openly declaring war against the Jesuit order, and this will become more apparent as we continue. Start the tape.
Okay.
From
tell me when to stop.
Comes understanding, and from
stop.
That understanding comes support.
Okay, he said, for from that scrutiny comes understanding. Now, first of all, everybody understands that scrutiny arises out of free speech and a free press. You can't scrutinize something unless you have the freedom to speak about it and to write about it. Okay? Both of those, free speech and free press, were forbidden in canon law. They're still forbidden in canon law today. And so Kennedy is plainly telling the listeners that he is not a papal king. Though he's Catholic, and though he, as a Catholic, has his first oath of allegiance to the Pope, he's plainly telling the American people that he will allow scrutiny of his administration, whereas a king under presidential under popish rule never allows scrutiny. It's forbidden in canon law. They rule at the behest of the Pope, and they do what the Pope says, and the people have no voice, no means to scrutinize. Now, go ahead with the tape.
Okay.
Support or opposition, and both are necessary.
Okay, stop the tape. Okay, he said, and from that understanding comes support or opposition, and both are necessary. All right, the big complaint that the Vatican has against Protestantism is that it is allowed to oppose the papacy and allowed to oppose the king of the nation. This president distinguishes himself from the normal papal traditions in that he wishes to have understanding with the people through scrutiny and discussion and a free press. And he's leaving it up to the people to decide whether to support or oppose his program. And he says both are necessary. Whereas in the old world order, freedom of speech was suppressed. Civilian participation in government was forbidden by Roman Catholic canon law. He is openly diverging from the Jesuit order and from the old world order when the papacy controlled the kings of the earth and ruled supremely over the people through those kings. Start the tape.
King or newspapers to support an administration, but I am...
Okay, I'm lost. He says this administration intends to be candid about its errors. Okay, during the old world order, the Vatican never admitted errors because it is infallible. According to Roman Catholic canon law, the papacy is infallible. And Kennedy is just making the distinction between his administration and the secrecy of the Jesuit program. Okay, he's making the distinction between his program and the Jesuit program. And I also want to remind the listeners that the entire Roman Catholic hierarchical system in this country, controlled by the Jesuit order, is laid out across the map of the United States in the form of archdioceses and dioceses and bishoprics. And these are the equivalent of what we would consider to be states and counties and townships and local municipal governments. What the hierarchical organization, the archbishoprics, the bishoprics are in reality is a shadow government. And that's what they were set up to do in the old world order, to be sure that the king obeyed the canon law and obeyed the pope. Okay, so he says this administration intends to be candid about its errors. The papacy and Roman Catholic kingly rule is never open about its errors or candid or even gives them up for debate or discussion. Anybody who was caught criticizing the Pope or the King, if he continued after the second admonition, what would be subject to being accused as a heretic and being hauled off to the Inquisition for torture and eventual execution. Now, he begins by saying, for as a wise man once said, an error does not become a mistake until you refuse to correct it. We intend to accept full responsibility for our errors. And we expect you to point them out when we miss them. Without debate, without criticism, no administration and no country can succeed. Now, under the old world order, these were called heresies. And it could get you hauled off to the Inquisition, as I stated before. Now, the papacy never intended to correct its errors because it never admitted making errors, because the papacy has taught from the earliest days of Roman Catholicism that the popes are the vicars and the replacement of Christ on earth, and therefore They have the attributes of God on earth, and that is infallibility. So to admit error, to admit making mistake, runs counter to the very teachings of Roman Catholicism. And anyone accusing the Pope of error gets hauled off to the Inquisition. Again, JFK is distinguishing himself from that old world order system and being candid about his errors, and expects the press to point them out whenever they make them, and to discuss them and bring them up for debate, and expect that his administration will correct those errors. And I don't know if you have the tape ready to go or not, but go ahead there, Walt.
Okay, here we go.
Your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people. For I have complete confidence.
Okay, stop the tape. Somehow the tape got ahead of where we are. Anyway, he continues, he says, and no republic can survive. In other words, without this scrutiny, without this debate, without this transparency of government, no republic can survive. Now, remember that republics are condemned in the syllabus of error and in Roman Catholic canon law and by every pope. The only form of government that is approved by the papacy is a kingly government. The pope is the king of kings and lord of lords, and he appoints the kings of the earth, and he keeps them obedient to his law and his decrees. A republic is that form of government that came about as a result of the Protestant Reformation, when the world began to realize, after reading the Bible for themselves, that they were the temple of the Holy Spirit, that the Holy Spirit of God dwelt within them, and that they didn't need a pope, and they didn't need a king. The law was written upon their hearts. And so it rested with the people to govern themselves according to the divine law of God. And they didn't need the Pope anymore to interpret God's law, because they knew it better than the Pope did. So with that mindset, Republican form of government sprang up, and constitutional republics like we have here in the United States, where the people are the governors. And the government simply responds to the wishes, needs, and demands of the citizenry. Now, the papacy believes that is a topsy-turvy or heretical form of government. The only government, according to the papacy, that is legitimate is a top-down hierarchical government where he controls the kings of the earth, and the kings of the earth control the people according to the papacy's wishes. No republic is allowed under papal rule. That the only form of government that the papacy will accept is a form of kingly governments. And I'll remind the listeners, too, doesn't the President of the United States these days act like a king? I mean, after all, he rules by fiat. He rules by presidential directives. He bypasses Congress. That organization set up in the government to represent the people is completely bypassed, and the president passes or signs into law, without public debate, presidential directives. And if you look at those presidential directives, you'll see, as I do, that they simply destroy the Protestant liberties that we have instituted by our Constitution and Bill of Rights. So the President of the United States acts like a king, not a president. Further, the Vatican instituted a think tank called the Club of Rome. And the Club of Rome took it upon itself to divide the world into 10 regions. In other words, redrew all the boundaries of all the countries in the world, making only 10 nations, and they're called regions, and over which each one will have appointed a papal king. And I assert that if for very long there is even a president of this country anymore, if he still exists, he'll simply be an administrator for that papal king that is assigned over this region of the world, which is region one, and it consists of the United States, Canada, and Mexico. But gone will be the days of constitutional republics, and restored will be the old world order. Now you know what the new world order is. He continues by saying, and that is why our press was protected by the First Amendment. His emphasis was on the First Amendment. Why? Because all the founding fathers knew that the First Amendment was the right of free speech, free press, freedom of conscience, freedom of religion, and the separation of church and state were all forbidden by the Pope. You could be burned at the stake for any of them. You were not free in religion. You must be Catholic. If you were not Catholic, you were a heretic and burned at the stake. If you spoke too freely and criticized the Pope or the King, you were burned at the stake. If you had demanded freedom of press and you printed opinions contrary to the papacy or the king, or if you used the press to print Bibles in the languages of the people, you were again sent off to the Inquisition and burned at the stake. There was no such thing as freedom of conscience. The papacy was the thought police, and the bishops and the priests oversaw through the confessional box the consciences of the people. And whenever they were determined to be heretics, they were condemned as heretics and again hauled off to the Inquisition. So the First Amendment protected us from the papacy ever rising to power, to controlling power in this country. Because if we have the First Amendment, freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of conscience, freedom of religion, and especially the separation of church and state, which the papacy so heavily relied on the unity of, that the Pope just simply can't be the king of this country. In this country, church and state are separate. And President Kennedy, even though he was Roman Catholic, insisted that the church and the state remain separate, because the Protestants of this country suffered unspeakably during those times when church and state were united, when the Roman Catholic Church demanded that the state do the bidding of the Pope. And so the First Amendment, the very First Amendment to our Constitution, protected us from papal rule. He continues, he says, the only business in America specifically protected by the Constitution was the press and free speech. He was depending upon the press and free speech to criticize his government. And he says, he said the press is not there for primarily to amuse and to entertain, not to emphasize the trivial and the sentimental, not to simply give the public what it wants, such as the press does today. He said this about the press. He says this means greater coverage and greater analysis of international news, for it is no longer far away and foreign, but close at hand and local. And it means that the government at all levels must meet its obligation to provide you with the fullest possible information outside the narrowest limits of national security. So he's telling him that his government, unlike the Jesuit order, unlike the Roman Catholic Church, is going to be candid and open as much as possible with government information to pass to the press so that they can inform and alert the American people. And the only limits that will be placed are those necessary to maintain national security in its most narrowest and limited form. So a free and open press is what he guaranteed the people that he was speaking to, and that was the press. And he says, and so it is to the printing press, to the recorder of man's deeds, the keeper of his conscience, the courier of his news, that we look for strength and assistance. He's literally asking the press for strength and assistance to his administration. And then he says, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent. And I want to tell the listeners that freedom and independence are uniquely Protestant virtues. Both are condemned in the Roman Catholic Church. Condemned by Roman Catholic Church, by the canon law, by papal encyclicals, and by history. Freedom and independence are Protestant ideals never found in a Roman Catholic society. Always condemned as heresy by the Roman Catholic Church. The First Amendment gave men the right to criticize the Pope and the King. Never before tolerated in Roman Catholic Europe in the old world order. No freedom to criticize the Pope or the King. No freedom to print Bibles or to print teachings contrary to the teachings of the Roman Catholic Church. Now, people who are listening carefully will say, but Tom, that does not describe the American Roman Catholic Church. I will take that into consideration by saying that the American Roman Catholic Church is unique in all the Catholic world because it is the only Roman Catholic Church in the world that has had to grow up under Protestant influence and Protestant institutions and Protestant liberties and under Protestant oversight. Catholics in this country are unique to every other Catholic in the world because of these Protestant liberties, and they love Protestant liberties. And if the Roman Catholics of this country, the American Roman Catholics, ever begin to comprehend that their Pope is taking over this country through the presidencies and through the Congress of this country, they will do as did the French Roman Catholics, the Spanish Roman Catholics, the German Roman Catholics, and they'll rise up against their papacy and tell the Pope, we will acknowledge your spiritual authority, but we will not tolerate your interference in our government. This is the mentality that developed into the Protestant Reformation. And I want the listeners to realize, many of whom are Roman Catholics, your Pope regards you, American Roman Catholics, as liberals. And that's why he's bringing this country to its knees. It's up to Roman Catholics in this country to rise up and to do as Roman Catholics have done throughout history. When they are oppressed, when they are made slaves by the papacy, they rise up and demand their liberty. And the first thing they do is kick the Jesuits out of the country, separate the Pope from the country, and they allow the papacy, if he must, be the spiritual leader of the church, but completely separate from the government. No union of church and state. Now, J.F. Kennedy, in this speech, outed the Jesuit order. And the Jesuit order was the ones who are bringing this country down. He said, we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy. We, being America, whether they're Catholic or Protestant, we are opposed by this monolithic and ruthless conspiracy, the Jesuit order. All they're trying to do, in the most secretive manner possible, is to restore the old world order. That is the new world order. When President John F. Kennedy exposed the Jesuits in this speech, and in not specific terms, but in terms that the knowledgeable, the insiders of Washington would understand his language and understand that he was talking about the Jesuit order, and that naming them in this way, identifying them in this way, made the Jesuits understand that if they didn't stop their attempts to take over this country and to take over the world, he was going to expose them. Now, Kennedy was concerned that if he had gone any further, he would have started a religious civil war in this country. He did the next best thing in clandestinely and in very carefully chosen words, let the Jesuits know he was on to their program. And he was going to contend with them And if they didn't cooperate, he was going to out them. And that's when the Roman Catholic Church and the Jesuit order set to plot his assassination. That's right. The Jesuits, the Roman Catholic hierarchy of this country, are the ones responsible for the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. And it's due largely to the third paragraph of this speech. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy, the Jesuit order. That's what he meant by when he said a monolithic conspiracy. It applies to no other organization on the planet. An apparent oxymoron, which should have drawn the attention of the press to whom he was speaking to ask the question, Mr. President, who were you speaking about? How could you have a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy? And President John F. Kennedy could have told them in terms expressing the seriousness of the information and the consequences if that information was mishandled. And then, through the press and through those inquisitive about who he was talking about, to set about to undermine the Jesuit order and to eventually kick them out of this country, which is what England did, because the Jesuits repeatedly tried to take over the government of England and make it a papal kingdom when Protestantism had claimed the throne and the crown of England. The Jesuits were attempting to do the same thing in this country. John F. Kennedy knew about it, and he tried to stop it in this speech to the press. And that's about all I have for this subject.
Okay, Tom, I have one thing I'd like. On September 12th of 1960, John F. Kennedy made this statement as he was talking to a group of Protestant ministers in Houston. He says, I believe in America that is officially neither Catholic, Protestant, nor Jewish, where no public official either requests or accepts instructions on public policy from the Pope, the National Council of Churches, or any other source, where no religious body seeks to impose its will directly or indirectly upon the general populace or the public acts of its officials, and where religious freedom is so invisible that an act against one church is treated as an act against all. I think this comment, too, this was made in 1960, and right from the get-go, he made his position known that he was an American Catholic, not a Catholic American. Comment.
Well, that's absolutely right. And he continued his warfare with the Vatican in this speech. Not only was he at war with the Jesuits, but he was at war with the papacy. His comments were outright assaults against the throne of the Pope. And well, the Pope had every right to expect that a Roman Catholic president would kowtow to papal dictation. John F. Kennedy, in an attempt to alleviate the fears of Protestants in this country, who at that time still remembered what the papacy represented in the world. Not so much today, but back then, Protestants still understood what the papacy was all about and how the papacy would take advantage of a Roman Catholic presidency to overthrow the Constitution and our Bill of Rights and impose Roman Catholic canon law. They had genuine fears, and Kennedy put them all at rest, and he used language that let the papacy know that he was first and foremost an American, and he was going to maintain the separation between church and state, and no pope was going to tell him what to do.
He also said in this speech, he said, I ask you tonight to follow in that tradition, to judge me on the basis of my record of 14 years in Congress, on my declared stance against an ambassador to the Vatican, against unconstitutional aid to parochial schools, and against any boycott of the public schools, which I have attended myself. Again, he's stating his Protestant position.
Yes. Yes, though he was Roman Catholic, he had come up in an American Roman Catholic Church under Protestant influences. And like many Catholics throughout history, they loved their Protestant liberties. And President Kennedy loved his Protestant liberties. And yes, he was not in any way going to allow his church and his pope to dictate his presidency and overturn the laws of this country and to impose Roman Catholic canon law. It was a declaration of war. The pope can be a spiritual head of the Roman Catholic Church, but he cannot exercise his temporal authority in this country by taking over his presidency or the Congress. And he was going to maintain the Constitution and the Protestant liberties embodied therein.
Yes,
and that's just the way it was. He was very unequivocal in his statements.
Yes, and also he was very popular. I was 19 years old, and I was in the military when he was assassinated. Of course, I was 19 and raised in public schools. Public schools make public fools. And so I didn't know what I know today, but I'm glad that we finished the broadcast here on this, because we have had two broadcasts, I think, on one of the only American president, fully American president, in the last 100 years. And he was...
Well, I've said this about President Kennedy. At least from the time of the presidency of John F. Kennedy, he's the only Protestant president we've had. The rest have kowtowed to the Vatican.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, see, and this is what keeps people off listening to such as this. And you can listen to the last hour and a half of these broadcasts, the archives of the first one, and this is part two. There is no Catholic bashing here. Tom is just finishing reading, or is reading currently right now, R.W. Thompson's The Papacy and the Civil Power, and it's very well documented in many, many books how the Vatican operates and deals with governments. This is just history.
The papacy is first and foremost a political institution that wraps itself in religion, and that's how it interjects itself into religion, because or into politics, because to criticize their political activity is to criticize their church, and they turn that into an accusation of religious persecution. And so everybody stays away from this, and it's been erased. The history of the popes have been erased from our history books in school. And what is most appalling to me after reading all this history is to realize how dumbed down the American society is now, having anything to do with Roman Catholic history or the history of the popes. And nobody suspects that the reason we're losing our liberties in this country is because of the direct influence of the papacy in our government. With the knowledge of the history that I've read and others have read, and Walt, that you've read, you fully understand why we're losing our liberties. It's because the pope is reestablishing the old world order, and we're coming under papal rule and under Roman Catholic canon law, and the first thing to go are our liberties.
Well, listen, Tom, it's 43 minutes, and I want to thank you, Tom. And Tom has agreed to come back on this Sunday. We're going to be talking about the Catholic founding fathers, the Carroll family. With that, would you tell them again, Tom, how to listen to your broadcast?
Yes, the broadcast is called Inquisition Update. You'll find it daily at 10 a.m. Central Time on www.firstamendmentradio.com. 10 a.m. Central Time, www.firstamendmentradio.com. You go to my website, inquisitionupdate.org. That's inquisitionupdate.org.
Okay, Tom. Thanks a lot, and good night. Good night to the listeners.
Yes, good night.
Good night.
I got a poor starting life, heading downhill real fast. Can't see the future, ain't recalling the past. I'm at the crossroad of life, stuck on the tracks. I can't go forward and I ain't going back. But there's a light at the end of the tunnel, they say. You just got to live life day by day. Keep the faith. hold your head high, soar like an eagle and fly. I've been neglecting my family, I lost all my friends. Can't tell you where the day starts, don't know where it ends. I burned all